This is John Floridus. You're listening to the Monday Music Special. Welcome to part two of our tribute to B.B. King. Thanks for sticking with us. You're listening to the Monday Music Special. This week we are featuring an interview with the great B.B. King, taken from a 2004 Musician's Spotlight. We rejoin our conversation with B.B. discussing his earliest and most important influences.
One of the things I was reading was, in terms of going back to the history of what influenced you early on, Blind Lemon Jefferson. Right. Was it T-Bone Walker's version of Stormy Monday that you said really was the one?
That's the only one it was.
That's the one.
Yeah. Everybody, ever since you heard, well, there was a guy called Bill Eckstein did Stormy Monday, but it was two different songs completely. So the only Stormy Monday that really was T-Bone Walker. So, but T-Bone Walker was far down the line. Blind Lemon, as we call him, the name was Lemon Jefferson. Blind Lemon, and there was another guy that I want to be like even today. His name was Lonnie Johnson. Mm-hmm. Lonnie Johnson was my favorite of all of the people, and I had a chance to meet him before he died. Lonnie Johnson was a gentleman. He played, it didn't ever seem to hold back. He let go. That's the way I do. When I'm on the stage, I let go. But he worked with so many different people. He worked with gospel singers, he worked with blues singers, he worked with jazz, and he worked, and it was a white person named Eddie Ling. You can look that up sometime. He did a couple of CDs, well today we call them CDs, but vinyls with him. He did two with them. And you should hear them both playing acoustic style guitar. That's some good playing. So it was Lonnie Johnson, then Blind Lemon. A jazz guitarist called Charlie Christen.
Sure.
One of the guys I like so much called Bunny Kessel. You ever hear that name?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Bunny Kessel said that Charlie Christen was something like the father of the jazz guitar. And if Bunny Kessel said, I believe it. He's one of the best guitarists in the world to me. Yeah. So that was Charlie Christen, and then a Frenchman. I was in Second World War, and a friend of mine was stationed in France, and he knew I liked guitar. So when he came home on furlough, he brought some records on a guy called Django Reinhardt, French gypsy they called him, and I fell in love with him. Then later on, this guy called T-Bone Walker. So those five people are the people that have stayed in my head. Every night. In fact, this is an MP3 here. I got him on there right now. So I get behind on things that's recorded today, because I do listen to radio sometime, but I'm really up to the oldies and goldies. I like them. But I'm like, not like some people. Some people say there hadn't been any good records made in the last 3 or 4 years. I disagree. I think it has been. And I think some good songs has been written and some good players has been. I don't know everybody. I didn't know everybody when I was, shall we say, beginning. I didn't. I had my five people that I knew.
Thank you.
Ford, but you said I wasn't a cowboy. I bought you a $10 dinner, and you said thanks for the snack. I'll let you live in my penthouse. You said it was just a shack. I gave you 7 children, and now you want to give them back. I've been very honest.
When you spoke of your own influences, one of the things that came to my mind was the tremendous influence you've had on players throughout the years. I know one of your latest collaborations is with Eric Clapton, and just thinking back on through that period of time when the British rock guys were so kind of coming to the forefront, and people like Eric Clapton were in turn recording older blues tunes and trying to get the public back aware of some of the older music. Jeff Beck and George Harrison and those kind of guys. What is your thoughts on that? As far as does that resonate with you? You know, is the degree to which you've influenced other people?
I don't know how to influence them. I keep hearing people say that to me, but Eric have never told me he paid attention to me when he liked Albert King. That's what I hear him say. He never said he liked me, not to me. The only one of the guys back there that ever told me himself was John of the Beatles.
Lennon?
John Lennon. He's the only guy that ever told me that he listened to me. Only one. Nobody else has ever. Ever. It was always Muddy Waters, Chuck Berry, or somebody like that. They never, not even Eric, and he and I have been friends since the 60s, but he never, I've never even read it in an interview where he said, you know, the way I read, he liked Albert King and so forth. But I'm glad to hear people say it, but it's only journalists and guys like yourself that tell me that. They've never told me. Huh. I swear it. Huh. I've read where they said it, but none of them, only John Lennon's the only guy. And the way that happened, the same guy that I mentioned that did that record where the watermelon was on the outside, they called it Indianola, right. Mississippi right. Seeds. Well, he knew John. I didn't. So I was reading a magazine once and I saw an interview where he said, the interviewer asked him, what would you like to do? And he said, play guitar like B.B. King. And I didn't believe it. So Bill Simpson called him one day when he was in New York and I talked to him and man, he made me almost fall out of my chair. I was so glad to hear it and to hear it and to talk with him. One of the most popular people ever in the world. And he was talking to me, a little guy from, well, not too little now, but a little guy at that time from Mississippi. Hard to believe.
Help me on. I can't. if you don't come to my rescue, I couldn't ever be anything. Hey, help the poor.
Help the poor.
Won't you help poor me?
Help poor me.
Have a heart, won't you, baby? Listen to my plea.
I have to be honest that when I found out I was going to get a chance to talk to you, I wanted to talk to a lot of people that I knew and ask them what would they ask B.B. King if they had a chance to. One of the things that came up was that in the midst of your version of the blues, in what people think of as kind of associate the blues with sadness or despair, and yet with your music there is frequently this great sense of love in your music, not just romantic love. And I wondered about that a little bit.
What you want to know?
Is it true?
I personally think that even the slaves wasn't sad all the time. So it started from sadness in a way, but no, I'm not sad all the time. I've had my problems. I've gone through holy hell, if you put it like that. I remember so many times when I had to put pasteboard paper in the bottom of my shoes to keep from the gravel, you know, cutting in on my feet. I've had all these things that happened to me. Now, that didn't make me sing the blues any better. Like people say, if you pick cotton, you have to pick cotton or plow mules and do all that. And I say no, but it helps. So, no, it's a myth to me that blues is like any other kind of music. You tell stories, you know, almost sum it up in four ways. Things you like, things you don't like. Things you want, and things you want to happen and things you don't want. You can almost sum it up like that because most men like women and most women like men. That's the big part of it. So it has to do with love. A woman quite often will tell you, if you're trying to sleep, well, do you think I'm going to sleep with you the first night I meet you? You know, in so many words, she's saying she got to care about you. Well, most men don't want to hear that. But that's the way it is. A lot of times you want to tell a story, and all the time stories are not sad. Because blues people love, too. They get put down as well. But some of the richest men I know get divorced. Even my guy running for president got divorced. Right. In case you don't know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But that's one reason I'm glad I live in, you know, in this country. Because it's not mandatory that you got to stay with somebody that you're not enjoying, you're not getting along with. Why not? You know, if it don't work, don't force it. And I think that's an old saying, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Same thing with women. Women get tired of you. I was playing a tune by Little Milton before you came in, a guy named Little Milton. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that in the song that the woman was leaving him. She said, you're a good man to do all the things you do. These are the lines in the song. He said, but you ain't got enough of nothing to satisfy me, so I can't stay here with you. And it makes a lot of sense to me, you know. Well, that's the way we are. So all songs, sometimes that's freedom. And sometimes freedom, they got an old saying, you know, freedom is the thing that make you feel like a person. This is what's so bad about so many countries, where you don't have freedom. You're scared to talk. You can't talk to anybody as if you're a citizen of the country. Well, blues to me is similar. you tell it, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. I wished I had a nice bus. I wish I had a nice car, and I wish people wouldn't just mistreat me, the many, many things. So it's like I say, you can almost sum it up like that. Long story short, blues music is just like any other kind of music in a way of speaking. You hear the great pop singers like, we'll say Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan. You hear these people sing these great songs, beautiful songs. Sarah Vaughan sings a song called Miss Butterfly. And the story is a little Japanese girl on the cherry tree. She used to meet this sailor, and he was from the U.S. So he taught her how to love the way we do over here. Mm-hmm. And then finally his duty called, and he had to leave. Oh man, it's songs like that just get me. But blues songs tell stories the same way. They just don't paint the beautiful pictures. We're not with the guy named that painted the Mona Lisa. We're not like him.
Maybe different brushes.
But long story short, we still put our little thing together, our little stories together. And the people that like blues understand it.
It's my own fault, baby.
I was talking to have an extended member of my family who's a almost 95-year-old African-American woman, and I was telling her that I was going to talk to you today. And she was telling me how she remembers still listening to your music on, as she said, you're too young to remember this, John, but we used to have record players you had to crank.
That's right.
And she remembers that, and I'm thinking today, you know, your music spans that period of time up to the point where, you, like you say, you've got MP3 files. You know,
I mean, that's an incredible thing.
I started recording in 1949. Now you think for yourself from there. 1949. As I said, if I can live until September the 16th, I'll be 79 years old.
Well, as I prepared for this interview, the only person I could think of that would be analogous to this was Andre Segovia. So I realized as I tried not to get nervous about talking to you, but in the back of my mind, I was thinking, I'm talking to the man who's essentially like Andre Segovia to the blues. You're like the blues Andre Segovia, in other words.
Well, in my opinion, there aren't or hasn't been a greater guitarist ever than Andre. Never, ever. And it's hard for me to think that one ever will be. He was the godfather, still is in my opinion. He done more for guitar than anyone that I know of.
Well, in my humble opinion, the blues music as we know it today would not be the same had it not been for you, in the same sense that classical guitar would not be classical guitar with Andre Segovia. So I know we have to wrap things up, and it has been an honor to spend time with you, and we hope to see you playing as long as Andre and longer.
I saw him, you know, when he was in his 90s.
Yes, so, he was in
so
his
you
90s.
You got a ways to go before you catch up to him.
Yeah, well, I hope so. Well, listen, all the best to you. Take good care, and thanks so much for your interest in what I had to say.
Absolutely.
Usually it's not that much, but...
This is John Floridus. Thank you for listening to our tribute to B.B. King on this Monday Music Special. On a personal note, as I said at the close of our 2004 two-part musician spotlight, one of the strongest lasting impressions I have of B.B. King is his humility. Having a career that spans cranked turntables all the way through digital downloads with over 90 albums and 70 years of recording and performing is a stunning accomplishment, and for this man to be so grounded and comfortable with himself is remarkable and an inspiration. And might I add, as you all probably know, Mr. King continued his career all the way up through his last days, passing away at the age of 89. What a great legacy he leaves behind for all of us who love great music. Special thanks to Musician Spotlight former co-host Brian Copper for engineering this interview with B.B. King. This Monday Music Special has been a production of Montana Public Radio.